Hey, pals of mine. I'm podcasting you from the beautiful Mendocino Coast in Northern California. My parents were both born and raised in Fort Bragg, California, and my dad's parents' place just northeast of Fort Bragg, inland about a mile or two, still remains in the family, although my grandparents are gone. And so I'm up here for a few days. We've got an acre proper in front, and there's 4 acres behind us, collectively that the extended family owns, cousins, great aunts, kids, and so I am pruning. I have been a pruning machine. It has taken me a total of 14 hours to cut back all this brush and creeping vines and wild feral rose vines, just layers and layers, brambles and chaos, and just to get to the source of some of these creepy crawlers, I just had to just gut one entire side just to get down to the base of it to see what's under the hood, so to speak. The other side I kind of left, just prune a little bit to make it prettier. And then we've got some plumbing issues underneath the house, so I had to clear all the sides on the house. A lot of the plants have gone for the season anyway, to clear access to the vents so somebody can crawl under there and dig dirt out so the second person can crawl in there and fix the leaking pipes. But I just love being out here. It's, like I said, my parents were both born and raised here. I grew up in Sacramento County, but every holiday we would drive up here because both sets of grandparents were here. It was about a 4-hour drive, which didn't really bother us so much because we loved it up here. This is like the Magic Kingdom. Disney had nothing on this place, and I'm not exaggerating. Just the peace, the tranquility. It's just absolutely gorgeous. Just being on the coast itself, in and of itself, is fabulous. But what makes Fort Bragg unique, Mendocino is about 10, 15 miles south of Fort Bragg. And Mendocino is always known as the Pretty Sister because it was mostly just a little village on the bluffs, and that's where the artists would hang out. And Fort Bragg was the mill town. This is where all the lumber was being shipped to and through and cut up and diced and all that good stuff. And so both my grandfathers worked at the mill. A lot of people did in town. It seemed like that was the main industry for quite a while. But now people are moving in from the cities, are coming into Fort Bragg and realizing this area, what it has to offer. And Mendocino, conversely, isn't doing as well as it used to. It's still beautiful. But the stores, the art galleries aren't there. There's a couple stores that have remained pretty constant, like this old bookstore, for example. And there is an art gallery, and there's a art school there. But Fort Bragg is, because the mill finally closed about 10 years ago, it's starting to find its new identity, but preserve its legacy, its history, which is important. To me, I'm a personal historian, but I've always appreciated the history of places because they're integral to who we are. You can pretend, well, the past is the past, move ahead. Well, that's all and good, but the past is who you are. That's just the way it is. It's part of your footprint, your soul imprint, your DNA, your ancestry. That's part of who you are. What you do with it is up to you, but it's important to acknowledge it. And each generation faces, deals with, retains it, embraces it, whatever their choice may be. But it's important that they have that option to review it and to learn more about themselves. So I think it's fabulous that people are coming in from out of town to the small previous logging town and just embracing it and retaining its history, but also bringing in new life, new energy, which is great. It's integrating the two worlds is lovely. I just really appreciate it that they're doing that. But anyway, so our property, it is the best place to hang. As kids, because you can just run around in the redwoods. Yes, redwoods, only found on the North Coast. Although I think there's some species in China somewhere, but predominantly it's California, Northern California, and that's why people travel from all over the world to spend time here. And I am so grateful that we have this place here that I can come to anytime. All the kids, all of us can come out here. But because no one actually lives here, we have to take turns coming up to mow the lawn and prune and all that so it doesn't look abandoned and nobody tries to break in. We've got an outdoor fire pit. We've got an outdoor bar. Yes, it's very cool. Someone had built, I can't remember, one of my cousins, older cousins, years ago, had built it when they were college days, when they were working at the mill. So they took, you know, bits and pieces from remnants from the mill that was being cut up, and then they poured this lacquer on. I can't remember what it's called, but it's crazy, crazy tough, durable, which is why it's now illegal to use it, because nothing gets through it. It has been sitting outside, because we also had a logging camp that we used to spend time at during the summer, every 4th of July. So it has been outside in the woods since mid-50s, I think, and it's still fine. So, again, that's why this stuff is illegal. but we are receiving the benefits year after year after year. So it's in a circle, inside a circle of redwoods. So we have that out there. We've got a little electrical outlet plugged in that my cousin's husband put together, which is fabulous. So we can have light and music. And then there's a basketball court that my grandfather had put up for his sons, my dad and uncles. And there's a horseshoe pit. And it's just, it's fabulous. It's fabulous for adults and kids. The kids run around playing on the stumps and running out in the bushes out in the back acres. And the rest of us just hang out and just all the stress and crap of daily life just falls off. It is the best, absolute best. But I have many nicks and bruises and cuts all over me from cutting and cutting and cutting. I spent a total of 14 hours, I figured out, not just pruning and getting down to the base of this thick brush, but going back and forth the trips to the burn pile, which now is a small mountain, so my uncles will have fun putting that down. He seems to enjoy the big bonfire, so that should be a treat for him. So I don't know, speaking of redwoods, there was, I don't remember when it was, late 90s. There's a woman, Julia Butterfly, and she wanted to bring awareness to the world of the ancient redwoods and how they should be preserved, because they are unique, truly. They don't grow. Like I said, with the exception of somewhere in China, they don't grow anywhere else in the world. They are a treasure, a natural treasure. And if you've never spent time in the redwoods, I strongly encourage you to do so. It's a free spa day, truly. Anyway, what she did, and there's a documentary was made of her, I believe, but I remember when this was going on. She decided to climb up this 200-foot high redwood, 1,000-year-old redwood, and she spent 738 days up there. This was located, again, on the North Coast. It was somewhere along the Eel River, I believe, and it worked two years. I mean, not 2 years, but a year and a half. That's a hell of a long time to live in a tree, but it did its work. A lot of people made fun of her, of course, you know, goofy, hippie, the usual stuff, because Mendocino is, even though people are moving into the area, it still is kind of hippie-ish. There's still that, you know, the love of the land. They're not too proud to enjoy and say that they're getting their hands and feet dirty and may not take a bath or a shower once in a while. But, you know, that's who they are. And so I was thinking about Julia Butterfly when I was driving up here, because coming up 101, just south of Willits, apparently the state is going to be expanding this road. It's just, it bottlenecks pretty badly certain times of the day. And so Caltrans is going to be expanding to two lanes. And then at some point, just, you know, looking ahead, they are assuming that it's going to have to be four lanes at some point. Well, there's this group of people that wanted to protest. But the California Highway Patrol got wind of it and arrived at 7 a.m. So before they could get a really big group of protesters going, got nipped in the bud pretty quickly. Some left after being asked to disperse. Those that refused to, of course, were arrested. So I'm reading about this when I got to the house and kind of catch myself up on what this is all about and learn that there's going to be a secret protesting. Well, the date will be secret. It will not be secret what they plan to do. They are going to hug a tree. They're going to form a chain around a really large, I'm assuming it's going to be a redwood, a really large tree that they don't want cut down. I don't know where. I drove up 101. I couldn't see where there are any trees there. I mean, one side just drops off and the other side's building, so I'm not sure. But anyway, they plan to form a human chain around this tree naked. So, of course, the press will come out and again, bring awareness. I just think it's funny. I think it's funny that different ways that people will protest something that's very near and dear to them. That, of course, is creative, and it usually works. It definitely gets the media going. Unfortunately, because it is Mendocino County, a lot of people will probably ignore it and say, oh, God, well, yeah, Mendocino County, you know, Willits. Well, it's Willits, of course, you know. Willits is a back country. You know, it's kind of sad in that way, but I was thinking about protests, and, you know, I can still see that gentleman who stood in front of the tank in Tiananmen Square, and I just wondered, on a personal level, is there anything that I would be that passionate about to do that? You know, I would probably write about it, being a writer. I mean, I'm an article writer, among other things. YouTube now. I guess that would be the best way to do it, wouldn't it? Get a viral video out there. That would get to the press. I think it would, you know, I don't know. Anyway, so I was visiting my cousin. I won't mention his name because he'll probably get upset. He's kind of self-contained social guy. He really doesn't go out much anymore. He's retired now. He's a nice guy, but you know, everyone has events that happen in their life that are not necessarily pleasant ones. And for him, his dad, I guess basically just decided he didn't want to be a dad. And when he and his mom split up, he just never saw his dad again. And somebody's family, his dad's family, raised him until they got to a certain age and said, we can't do this anymore. And you're going to have to come and take your child. Well, the child is now 9 years old. Didn't know his dad at all. And his dad is now married to my great aunt. And he comes and tells her, we have to raise my son. And she said, you have a son? I didn't even know you were married before. So my poor cousin, he now has to move into this house and live with these two people he doesn't know. I mean, virtually strangers. And his new stepmother really has no interest in him at all and makes him sleep in the garage. It was years before they had an add-on that he could sleep in. He always says, oh, well, it's fine. I didn't want to be inside anyway. It was just not a pleasant, not a warm, maternal welcome, to be sure. I mean, as soon as he graduated from high school, he left town. A couple of unsuccessful marriages. Some people move ahead, others are bitter, and he's the latter. He's a nice guy. He just has a tendency to cling, and stubbornness is pretty intense. there's a definite wall around him, a few walls, like Get Smart, several walls. So when I was over there visiting him, and when I got into town, and he was telling me what he supplements his retirement. He buys things that collectors like and sells them on eBay. And he goes to Paris, you know, every year if he can. If things around town, now that his mom, you know, is gone, she just died a few months back, he'll have the freedom to do that. But that's pretty much all he does. He has a friend in town who helps people move, and he might help him out. But otherwise, he just putters, and he's content to just putter. And he's content to not have a relationship, although he does date. He's just resigned himself to this life, which is fine. That's his life. But to give an idea, he just sits around, you know, and putters. He was cleaning out mom's house, my great aunt's house, because they have to sell it. And so he made a trip to the dump. And this is a small town dump. It's not a big city dump. So it's unusual to run into people that you know. So he runs into another cousin of mine, who was helping clean her mom's house, who's had a serious stroke and so needed a purge. And so anyway, they come across somebody had dumped 150 tennis rackets. Tennis rackets, 150. Some of them going way back to the 30s. What a interesting, I almost said weird, but there must be a reason, have been a reason clearly for whoever that person was. And those presses, you know, you'd screw on the old wooden rackets, you know, to keep it tight. They'd all been removed, but those were all dumped as well. 150, so they just kind of split them, the tennis racks between them, to sell on eBay, to make a little bit of money. He told me that one of them, he looked them up on eBay, was worth $100, just one of them. So anyway, that's the kind of guy he is. So I was visiting him, and he's showing me the three that he had left. One of them was not a tennis racket, it was round. I think it's squash, maybe. It was too round for badminton. But it could have been an original badminton. I mean, some of these were old tennis rackets. So anyway, he has a collection. He collects everything from Fort Bragg, postcards and, you know, tickets and, you know, train tickets and just everything. And he's just amassed this huge collection of Fort Bragg memorabilia. And he's got binders filled with these postcards. And the binders are, you know, the 4-inch spine binders, big binders. And he has them by topics, I think. And so he pulled one out so I could look at it. So I'm glancing through, and it's fascinating to me because I say I love history and the logging industry, but not just the logs, but the town and, you know, places that don't exist anymore or the ones that still do. He even has photos when the 1906 San Francisco earthquake, as everybody calls it, occurred. It wasn't just in San Francisco. I mean, obviously, it was all up and down the coast, including Fort Bragg. Fort Bragg didn't get the press like San Francisco did because it didn't have as high a population. But it definitely had some damage. And miraculously, only one person died. This gentleman was standing next to a fireplace, and the bricks fell on him, crushed him. But otherwise, it was the same kind of damage that San Francisco had, fire. That was just fortunately, there's a ship had been docked in the harbor, and they were able to get a long hose in and put some of them out. But anyway, he had some postcards of some of the damaged buildings from Fort Bragg. And I know the Historical Society don't have them, but he will not share any of it. He gets very stubborn. He's very obstinate. He has a small safe, and he says all the stuff is going in the safe. And when he dies, that safe is going to the bottom of the ocean, and it's going with him. Why? He says, well, I spent all the time and money on them, and nobody else gets them. If they wanted to see these, then they could have spent the time and money. It's just, I don't get it. I don't get it. You know, so it goes back to issues that we all have. And I truly hope that you aren't that bitter. You know, that you move forward and and try to, if you can't completely let it go, at least ease off some of it. You know, it's just, it's poisoning you more. You're beating yourself up, and you don't deserve that. Whoever you are and whatever's occurred to you, you deserve to have a healthy life. So stop. Just stop it. If you're doing this, stop it. People care about you. Even if you don't think they do, they do. Somebody who works with you, your neighbor, somebody cares about you. Otherwise, just leave the planet. Why even bother being here? Seriously. I'm not advocating suicide, but truly you're just taking up space if you're that bitter. So, anyway, get off down that. I guess what really pisses me off about this, I was going to let it go. Apparently not. This is how intense he is about this obsession of not letting anyone have any of these postcards. There was a postcard in there I recognized with my great uncle Slim, because it's a photo that's been passed around the family. And because this is back when people would photographs would be used for postcards. It was fairly commonplace. And I'm looking at the back of it, and there's my great aunt Jessie had written to him. And it's like 1930 something. And I go, oh my God, and he wouldn't let me have it. He says, nope, put it back. I said, but my, nope, put it back. It's not even his family. It's my family. He's, anyway. Okay, my turn to let it go, walk away. I just wish I hadn't seen it. I wish I hadn't seen it because it makes me upset. Of course, I can't protest like the tree huggers and Julia Butterfly. It won't do any good. He just doesn't give a shit. He doesn't care. That's his stuff. Boom. End of discussion. The period is bold, italic, very large font. End of discussion. So, anyway, going back up, I read this fun book called Charlotte Street by Danny Wallace. It's a pretty quick read, a lot of dialogue. The characters in there are fabulous. You know, sometimes you read a book and you can visualize an actor playing a particular role or reading, you know, being that personality. That's how I felt about reading that. And I like how this one comment or observation he made, that Facebook are comprised of efficient friendships. It's true. Efficient friendships. That's what it is, isn't it? Kind of gets to the point. Clean. What are you doing? What are you doing? Da, 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 da. Okay. Good. Click off. Good to go. Which is kind of sad, actually, which is his point. You know, friendships really should be in person. Obviously, you can't always do that. And Facebook is fabulous for those that live far distances. It's great in that respect. But for those that live in town, I hope you're spending time with each other. Because when you're 95 and sitting in a rest home, I'm just saying. So, have you seen these billboards, RushmoreVote.com? I know they're just idiots. I know that, but my curiosity sometimes, I just have to know, like, what the hell? So for those of you who haven't seen it, it's got the image of the iconic monument, Mount Rushmore, and underneath it, it says, you know, vote, Bush or Obama. Well, they're clearly, they just want somebody to like on their Facebook page and someone to vote and see how many people will respond to it. But what irks me is that it got my curiosity going, because I wonder who the hell are these people that think that this can be done. Oh, by the way, there's no room on Mount Rushmore for any faces, just FYI. But, of course, I couldn't find anything, and I just thought, God, you know, the money that whoever these people have spent on these billboards, because they're not cheap. Just imagine, what would you, if someone gave you a check for the amount of money that they have spent on billboards, what would you do with it? And I just, I love this phrase, gloat walk. I just love that. I don't know why. I just love that. You've accomplished something, and you just want to let everybody know it, so you have a gloat walk. Look at me, look what I did. I was watching go on, you know, with Matthew Perry, and he was doing the gloat walk around the restaurant going, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I happen to love that for some reason. I also love Marc Maron's podcasts. I just want to put it out there. He doesn't try to be anything that he's not, and he's just having conversations, which is what podcasts should be if you're an interviewer. It shouldn't be clinical. It shouldn't have a little, I mean, you want to have a few notes if there's certain points that you want to bring up that you or your interviewee want to make. But and he's starting to delve into the music industry, too, which is kind of cool. I just love that Dave Grohl. I mentioned that before, but that was a great interview. But again, I love that he's interviewing classic actors and comedians. You need to listen to these three. Yes, you need to. If you know these people, then you're truly going to enjoy them. If you don't know who they are, then you need to educate yourself. Carl Reiner, Mel Brooks, and recently Dick Van Dyke. Fabulous, fabulous stuff. You know, I mean, what would you ask these guys if you could sit down with them? I mean, everybody has questions, but what would you ask them? I'd have to think about it. Like, I wouldn't even know how to start. Speaking of how to start, Dave Navarro, what is up with him hanging by meat hooks? I mean, what events have occurred in his life that led up to the point where he thought that would be a fun idea? You know, talk about backstory and issues. What a trippy guy. So my old buddy, high school buddy, is out from Florida because her sister, older sister, is sadly moving into the Alzheimer's range. So she's got a house and property and adult kids that still think they're 5 years old that she's been having to deal with by herself, cleaning out two barns. There's an unbridled horse, two dogs, 5 geese, and chickens. There's geese shit in the house because people are tracking it in. There are cobwebs thick on the acoustic ceiling, just thick. It's just disgusting. She spent a couple of days just getting the barns cleaned out and to figure what the hell is in there to begin with, you know, because she has to sell it. She needs some money, medical care, past due, costs around the house, utilities, and all of this. Just been a mess. And plus the two girls, like I said, that are adults in their 20s, act like they're 5 years old, and she's dealing with, and it's like bipolar. You have one who claims to be introvert, but she's really a manipulative bitch. I met her once. That was enough. Thank you. So dealing with all of this by herself, I've been trying to help when I can, but she really just thinks she has to deal with on her own. Fortunately, she telecommutes, so she's able to work out on this coast while it's 2 months. She's been spending the last 2 months trying to deal with all this. It's working with the bank, insurance companies, and the federal and the state. What kind of aid is her sister eligible for, and the pension, and just a nightmare. So, of course, the piece de resistance was the knock at the door from the Jehovah's Witnesses saying that they want their sister back in the family, and they want her furniture. Oh, and they want to save her soul. That's pretty much when she snapped. So I said, you know, we need to go out. Let's just walk around and have a couple drinks. Let's just go. So took her up in the foothills, and we just kind of walked around a little couple of towns, and she was able to relax a little bit before going in again. So this is her last week, and bless her heart, more power to her. I have utmost respect for any of you that are having to take this on your own shoulders, nobody to share it with you. I truly hope you have a support group. If you don't, and even a support person, somebody in your corner, you know, I mean, if you just need to vent on my podcast, on my page here, feel free to do it. Feel free. I mean, you deserve it. I mean, she does have support group, but they're all in Florida. So she, anyway. But she knows that people are there, but we can only do so much. But again, please feel free to rant. I have no problem with that. Okay. Here's a little pet peeve that I'm sure a lot of you have. What is up with these drivers who are incapable of merging in traffic? On the freeways or from two lanes to one? What do you think? I don't know. So that's my little rant. So the last thing I wanted to talk about this week, I wrote this article on this gentleman, Mike Williams. It's a story of rags to riches to rags again, and climbing his way back up out of the proverbial dumpster, literal and proverbial. He has invented a pod, is what he's calling it, shelters for the homeless, individual, self. It's not an RV. It's like a one room, 6x8 pod that can be stackable, made out of fiberglass. And he got the idea when he was living in a dumpster, staying in the dumpster, which was the safest place to be when you're down and out, because in addition to preventing yourself from getting beat up, you don't want to be out in plain view where the cops will tell you to, move on. It's why he's lying in there. And he's kind of building this little shelf of boxes. He had this idea of the shape. And by the way, this guy's already invented 20 medical and dental devices, the first of which was the intraoral camera, which allows you to see inside your mouth when the dentist is looking at it. Yeah, that he invented that. What happened to him was, yes, he did very well, became wealthy, pretty wealthy, and then stock market, the home market, real estate market took a dive. He took a nosedive. He got caught in a scam in Florida, speaking of Florida, for over $2 million, and he just lost everything. His wife left him. He was sleeping in his car. Then he lost the car because he couldn't make the car payments. But he still has that mind of an inventor. He's a very smart guy. He's got a PhD. No dummy. So even though he's down and out and struggling to survive, he was thinking about where could the homeless stay? Where's a place that they could stay, transitional housing even? So that's really cool. You're going to be hearing about it. He's having the prototype. It's being built as we speak, or as I speak. And Ann Curry has already approached him about doing the story on it. So he's in discussions with them. There's going to be a documentary about the situation that he was in and how he came to be out of it, thanks to Dr. Zhang Chen, who is a surgeon, and he operated on Mike when he got the crap beat out of him, including having his pancreas damaged. And Dr. Chen, who's a philanthropist, altruistic gentleman, helped get him back on his feet. They discussed his inventions and his idea of a homeless pod, and so the doctor set him up an apartment, co-signed, 6-month lease, gave him some clothes, cleaned him up, and they started this nonprofit. And so you're going to be hearing about it, and it's very, very cool. So what Mike would like to do is on the outskirts of the city limits, where you don't have the zoning law limitations. It's kind of like a campground of sorts with all these pods, and they would have a common kitchen area and shower and bath, but each pod has its own solar charger system. It comes with a sleeping bag and a pad, and it's made out of fiberglass. It's non-toxic, fireproof, and they can be stackable, as I say. So it can also be used for disaster relief areas. Like Katrina, that horrific, horrific situation that continues because there are all those RVs and trailers uninhabitable. They're so toxic. They're still just sitting out there, not being used. Just insane. So they can be transported easily to disaster areas. And kind of taking the same theory in Japan where people need to spend the night, only these look like they're a little more comfortable. They're not in a honeycomb. They can be used in airports. And if you want to sponsor a homeless person, you could sponsor, you know, and buy one of these. So if someone needs a place to stay, you know, however long they need it. And he was also thinking that in this community of pods outside the city limits, this living area, transitional, because he is calling it, you know, the transition area, that you aren't going to be there till death. It's just, you know, an assist to get you to the next place. So there'll be Wi-Fi available, so you could have your phone, and, you know, if you need to send resumes out and, you know, obtain employment. And also there are organizations out there, manufacturing organizations, that perhaps have things that are put together, piecemeal, that perhaps can be brought out to the community, the compound, and they can make some money doing that, putting together whatever items, retail items someone has, you know, not necessarily retail items, but just large pieces of stuff that instead of sticking out an assembly line and paying big bucks to people who don't really need it, to have it out there. So Steps Housing is what it's called. They finally have their website up, so if you want to check that out. And the lady who lived in the Redwoods, her name was Julia Butterfly, so if you want to check her out and see what some protesters do. Well, she wasn't a protester, so... Well, she was, but she really wanted to educate the world on these beautiful trees that are more than just trees, because they are unique species and they represent the planet, truly, without me sounding like a hippie, quote-unquote. Unless you spent time in the Redwoods, you don't get it. You don't get it. You have to be there to see it, really. Otherwise, it's just rhetoric and you're going to ignore it. So please, if you've never spent time in the Redwoods, treat yourself. It's absolute joy. So, do something different next week. Maybe spend time in the Redwoods.